Okay, so the way our morning will go is that we'll begin shortly with an arriving meditation, which is an extremely lovely way to be to just make a transition from whatever you've been doing this morning to our time of dropping into practice together. So we'll have this arriving meditation, and then I will offer a short talk, a few words, just to bring us into this time of exploration together. And then we'll have a longer meditation, a break, and then I'll offer a Dharma talk, a little longer Dharma talk, and we'll have plenty of time to talk with each other also. And just to reiterate, when Ileana said, please don't chat me, that's because I have a really hard time looking at a chat and staying on track and looking at you and just staying present in myself. So if you have a question that you really want to ask, please either write it down for yourself or you can send a chat to Ileana, and then there will be pauses where we have time to talk with each other. And so we'll get to that question. And I know what that feels like, you know, when something comes up and you really want to ask on a certain point that I may have just said, and you don't want to forget it. So chat it into Ileana or write it down so you don't forget. Okay, so with that, let's please move into our arriving meditation. And however you find a comfortable posture, that's the invitation, is to come into a posture, whether it's seated, whether it's standing, whether it's reclining, maybe you're even doing a little bit of walking meditation. Just coming into this time, eyes open or closed. I like to close my eyes. It helps me turn my awareness inwards. But if you like open eyes, please allow a gentle, soft gaze downward. Not looking at anything, just a soft gaze. And beginning by sensing the body connected to whatever it's touching, whether it's furniture or the floor, which are both connected to the earth. Sensing that natural groundedness of the body when we can sense into those touch points. The feet, perhaps the backs of the legs, the bottom. And even noticing the places where the body is touching itself, the eyelids, the lips, the tongue in the mouth, the sides of the inner arms touching the torso. Perhaps your hands are in your lap or the hands are touching each other. The experience of groundedness, connectedness. And then coming into an awareness of the breath. Just breathe and know you're breathing. Nothing special to do. Just sensing the breath cycle itself. Drop the shoulders a little bit, any amount. Oftentimes there's some holding in the neck or shoulders that we're unaware of. This dropping of the shoulders naturally lets the heart lift a little bit. Lets the heart join. And as we turn the awareness inward to the body, the breath, and the heart, the mind begins to settle as well. Let's sit quietly for a few minutes. noticing, even if in this just a couple of minutes of arriving and settling, is there some relaxation, some sense of ah that is coming about? Knowing that there's nothing to do right now, just coming into this time of practice, this practice of awareness, kindness, a bit of an affirmation of why we're here. Oh yeah, sitting down and practice again in Sangha. Letting the goodness of that inside. And now to bring in a reflection question, a couple of them. This reminder about why we're here. Why are you here today? What brings you to practice in general and today? Anything specific for today? What do you hope will happen, if anything? Where will it lead? Toward what end? A very important question. Why do we do what we do? Toward what end? Just let that reflection drop in. It doesn't need to be overly analytical. But it's just a really lovely way to remind yourself about why you're here. The support, the outcomes of practice that you've learned about over all these years. Whether this is your first time or you've been practicing for many years, each time is always new, but it's also a reinforcement, a rededication to your own development of awareness and kindness, non-harming. And we do it together. Welcome back, everybody. I do love arriving meditation, and if you are with me in different classes, you know that we always start that way. I find it extremely grounding, and it really helps me move from whatever I was doing 10 minutes ago to being solidly here and present and inside this practice. So I want to talk a little bit before we have our longer meditation about an expanded and inclusive understanding of what mindfulness is. And certainly, my hunch is you have your own definition of mindfulness, and we hear many definitions over and over and over again about what mindfulness is. And I think it's easy with most anything to just in some way stop hearing it. Like, oh yeah, I know what that is, that presence of mind, that openness. But do we really know? And how does it really show up for us? And of course, the purpose of our practice, of this sitting quietly, of this reflective meditation practice, is so that the benefits of it show up in our regular daily walking around lives. We're not doing this just to do it. We're doing it toward what end? And that question, toward what end, is a vital question. And for me, I know that over time, that why I practice is that I want to have more ease and capacity in my life to be with whatever comes up. And I think about it in terms of having enough awareness, enough impulse control, that I respond rather than react, and that it cultivates this innate wisdom so that I can live my life from a kind, skillful place, causing the least amount of harm possible towards myself and others. And my guess is that that intention is pretty common. You know, it's a general intention, but I think it's really worthwhile reflecting on periodically. Why am I doing what I'm doing? Because so many things get to be habitual. So let's talk a little bit about this bigger way of this expanded and inclusive definition of mindfulness. And I think about it as the awareness of the present moment without judgment or reactivity, presence of mind. We could call it non-judgmental awareness of whatever is happening right now, whether we like it or not, knowing however it is, it's going to change. But Thich Nhat Hanh says it very succinctly. Mindfulness allows us to look deeply and see what's going on. It means seeing and knowing what's going on. Now, that's succinct. Mindfulness allows us to look deeply and see what's going on. It means to see and know what's going on. Let's take that apart, because on the surface, to see and know what's going on. But underneath that, I think, is where it gets a little trickier. And also, there's so much depth and breadth to that. So to look deeply and see what's going on, to know what's going on, that first takes us into the four foundations of mindfulness, being mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of the breath. And we start there. We start there very often with our meditation practice or even our interactions, our relational practices, to keep some groundedness in the body. Every time I say something like feet on the floor, bottom in the chair, sensing those places where the body is touching itself, what we're doing is cultivating mindfulness of the body. And this is a very secure foundation that we can tap into all the time. And the body lets us know all the time how we are through the nervous system, through the musculoskeletal system. Mindfulness of the body, to look deeply, to sense what's going on. And then we go into the other foundations of mindfulness, the second foundation of mindfulness, which is called Vedana, the awareness of pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. And I know we've spoken a lot about that in this class, and probably anybody else you've come to class with, there is a conversation at some point about how the experience of comfort or discomfort, or liking or disliking, pleasant or unpleasant, how it influences our thinking, our emotions, and our actions. So to see what's going on. And then mindfulness of the mind, the third foundation of mindfulness. You know, every time we say, you know, checking in with the state of mind, what's there? Is there delight in the mind? Is there not delight in the mind? Is there anger? Is the mind free of anger? Just being able to know Oh, a mind that is busy is like this. A mind that is a little sluggish is like this. And then we get into the fourth foundation of mindfulness, which is called mindfulness of the dharmas, which means all of our experiences. And it includes the hindrances and the awakening factors. It gets into what are known as the aggregates, and we're not going to go into all of that, but it's a very big topic. And it also includes the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path and the heart practices. And then it gets into, so when we just start to look deeply and see what's going on, to know what's going on, that is in a vast landscape of what mindfulness is. To become aware of all of that is a deep practice. And then it goes on to include what are called the three characteristics or the three universal facts of life, of impermanence and dukkha or suffering and karma or interconnection. And also the awareness of the release of from what are called the three toxins or poisons, greed, ill will, and delusion. So everything that I just named are foundational teachings and pillars. They give us the framework of what mindfulness is. And so from my understanding of what Thich Nhat Hanh is saying, is that mindfulness allows us to look deeply and know what's going on. It means seeing and knowing what's going on. This is no small task. This is no small task at all. So I just wanted to bring that in as you think about mindfulness practice, that it's got so much depth to it. And I don't bring all of this in as a way to make it sound like, oh my God, this is so overwhelming. It's so much, but just to give you the richness of how inclusive, how expansive this practice is, and then how beautiful it is, because we can enter into it from any of those places. We don't have to start at A and go to Z. We start where we are with parts of the practice that make sense to us to go in that way. And so from there, I've been thinking about couple other ways to think about our practice. And I was listening to a talk, an interview the other day with Stephen Batchelor. He was interviewed by Krista Tippett on Being. He has a new book. If you're familiar with Stephen Batchelor, he's a Dharma teacher, lives in France. Very good teacher, very he's a scholar. And he was talking about in the practice of solitude. He named this way of thinking about practice, which he calls ethical intelligence. Ethical intelligence. And I thought that was so poignant and something for us to think about. We hear a lot about emotional intelligence or social emotional learning in school. But if we take two parts of that, if we take ethical intelligence and emotional intelligence, I think we are again getting to the heart of our practice. So, what is ethical intelligence? It's the wisdom to know when to act grounded in non-harming, grounded in our wisdom, in our insight. So, ethical intelligence really takes seriously all of the practices of non-harming, all of the heart practices, and employs them for the well-being of ourselves and others. While emotional intelligence is actually knowing how to respond versus react. Does this make sense? Are you with me on this? I think this is actually really interesting. So emotional intelligence, you know, we talk so much about reactivity and transforming reactivity into responsiveness, to not saying things out of confusion or that reactive mind when we've been hurt, not reacting out of hurt, but actually having the impulse control to actually work with whatever is happening so we respond effectively and with skill. So we don't cause more harm, but we actually contribute to the greater good. So pairing this, the ethical intelligence to know what when I do it, This is from the Buddha, this great compass question. What, when I do it, will be for my long-term welfare and happiness? But not my own, not just my own. What, when I do it, will contribute or not contribute to the greater good? So we really understand our deep connection to everything. And then the emotional intelligence to watch our impulse control. I think about emotional intelligence, largely both of these, as impulse control. And when we know what's going on, when we can see into what's happening through the practice of mindfulness, I think we become emotionally and ethically intelligent. They all work to support each other. So when I ask that reflection question, why do you practice? What do you hope for? Toward what end? It's getting to all of this. It's getting to all of these aspects of transforming reactivity into responsiveness, to having a fluency and a fluidity with our minds and our hearts, with whatever is happening here. And I believe that our meditation practice helps to stabilize the mind and allow the heart to emerge, and we get to know and see exactly what is going on, and we cultivate wise response. And one of the ways we can, if that feels confusing, you know, sometimes you just feel like, oh, that's just too much. I don't know. I'm in a pickle right now, and I don't actually know how I want to respond. Or we get completely triggered, and we say something or do something that then we regret later. That's just being human. We're kind to ourselves, and we say, oh, yeah, course correct, and we come back. But there's a story from one of Suzuki Roshi's students who said to him one day, Roshi, please tell me, what is the teaching of your lifetime? What is the most important thing? And his response was to find out what is the most important thing. To find out what is the most important thing. Now, such a Zen response, right? I mean, the student may have thought, could you be a little more specific, please? I was asking you a specific question, and you just asked me my own question back. But actually, it's a brilliant response, because what is the most important thing for me right now may not be the most important thing for you right now. But what we do is we stay in this process of inquiry, of being willing to be curious and open to seeing what's here, to knowing what's here, and to find out what is the most important thing. That is just the process of practice. The thing itself is probably less important than the willingness to be in the process. So this is what we're doing in mindfulness practice. Being able, training ourselves. This is a training to look deeply and see what's going on. It's a training to not only see what's going on, but to understand it. And then to behave out of that, and to let it inform our lives out of that. Any questions about that before we move into our meditation? And you're welcome to use the raise hand feature or just make yourself known, and Ileana will bring you in. Okay, then let's move into our meditation. We'll be here for, probably a half an hour, 25 to 30 minutes. So please find a way to be in your body that feels stable. We'll work with both a single-pointed meditation and then expanding the awareness, so you have the experience of cultivating this very carefully honed awareness and then letting it expand a little bit. I'll guide you some. So finding, please, a posture that you are comfortable in. Again, whether you're seated or standing or reclining, or maybe you'll choose walking meditation for this time, all are fine. Let's begin with a few very deliberate breaths just to bring us in. Sensing again the body. Sensing into the heart, meeting, greeting, letting the heart belong just as it is. And the same thing with the mind. You may even notice an underlying current of pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. Whatever it is, just noticing it. You don't even have to worry about why or changing it, whatever it is. Just becoming aware of your general state, body, heart, mind, your whole being. And before we go any further to any meditation instructions, let's begin with this beautiful invocation. It comes from many teachings at the start teachings. O nobly born, you who are the sons and daughters of the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas, the awakened ones, remember who you are, your luminous not mind, the goodness of your heart. Trust it. Return to it. It is home. Trusting and returning to this ground of your being, to the steadiness of this practice together, the reliability of this. And now sensing into the motion of the body in response to breathing. Perhaps wherever you feel your breath the most. Maybe it's right where the air goes in and out of the nostrils. Or the rise and fall of the chest and the shoulders as the lungs fill and empty. Or may it be the way the belly expands and contracts as you breathe. Or maybe for you, settling the attention on touch, the sense of the feet or the hands or the seat works better for you than the breath. So find that place where you can settle your attention and stay there. Coming back when the mind wanders, being gentle and kind with yourself and beginning again. Finding the balance, finding the momentum, it will emerge. Just keep coming back over and over again to your point of awareness. We'll sit quietly. Then when the mind feels stable, the body relaxed, if you're noticing any holding anywhere in the body, be any constriction or tightness, see if you can bring some of this relaxed energy to that area. And every time you exhale, just giving the suggestion to that part of the body to release. It's releasing into the space around you, the space around it. Loosening any grip that might be there if you can. See what happens. And from here, widening out the awareness, moving from that steady attention on that one single spot, whether the breath or the body, to a wider view, like going from a zoom lens to a wide angle, settling back in the awareness, noticing how thoughts come and hang around and go, how sensations come, make themselves known, and they go. Same thing with emotional energies. Being a witness to it all. It's like the difference between pedaling and coasting. We pedal to get our balance and momentum when we hold the attention steady on one point. And then once it's steady, more balanced, it can coast. That's the settling back into the awareness and witnessing it all. And when the mind wobbles, you need to get your balance back, come back to that single point for as long as you need, and then coast again. And now drawing the awareness into the heart center. Imagine, if you like, breathing in and out of the space of the heart, the center of the chest, the center of the upper back, even the upper side ribs, the whole energetic heart center, or even imagining the physical heart itself. Drawing fresh breath and fresh energy into this space from every direction, from behind the heart and in front, sides, diagonals, above and below. Breathing into this heart space. And as you exhale, exhaling back out into every direction. This is called the heart's breath, nurturing, energizing, caring for the space of the heart. So practicing this heart's breath for the next minute or so, if you like. Sensing into the energy of this heart, enlivening it, supporting it to be just exactly as it is. Let's move into our metta practice. And we'll use a very traditional phrases of offering ourselves the gift of our own kindness, the blessing of well-being. If you have your own metta phrases, feel free to use them. If you're new to metta practice, this is the repetition of phrases of well-being, of blessings, silently to ourselves, offering ourselves this gift of kindness. Just saying to yourself, may I feel safe and protected. May I feel safe and protected. May I feel peaceful and happy. May I feel peaceful and happy. May I feel healthy and strong. May I feel healthy and strong. May I live with ease and well-being. May I live with ease and well-being. Go another round, and this time see if you can actually sense how that reverberates in your body, in your heart, in your mind. May I feel safe and protected. Touching in, what does safety actually feel like? Any amount. May I feel peaceful and happy. dropping in that suggestion of peacefulness and happiness. What do you notice? May I feel healthy and strong. What is that like? Can you feel some innate strength inside of you? Again, any amount. May I live with ease and well-being. Just saying the word ease, is there a reverberation? Is there some letting go that happens into a quality of well-being? May I live with ease and well-being. And letting that go, coming back to a sense of your body and your breath, just being here. And now we'll move into our metta practice together, where we will offer into our virtual space together, whomever we may be thinking of, and offering some care, some blessings of well-being. So if you would like to offer anything, take turns, you'll get it. You'll be able to unmute yourself now if you feel like sharing anything. And I'll begin just saying who you're thinking of. Maybe those who have both joys or sorrows, whoever you'd like to bring in. I'm thinking about my mother-in-law who is entering her last days and wishing her and all of her kids and her husband, whole family, as much ease and peace as we go through this time of letting go. Who are you thinking of? So we hold each other in our sorrows and in our joys and in our common humanity of living a life that includes these losses that are difficult. And we do hold this confidence and trust and faith that as we place our heart in the direction of goodness, that it helps to hold us and hold each other. So let's take 5 or 6 minutes for a break. Come back, please. So come back at 11:08, 8 minutes after the hour, wherever you are, 8 minutes after the hour. Thank you. Welcome back, everybody. Let's wait another moment as we settle in. Ileana, are you there? Oh, there you are. So we welcome back, everybody. I'm going to take a few moments for some announcements. So I'm wondering if how the meditation was. You know, sometimes we don't necessarily talk with each other about the nitty-gritty of meditation itself, or if you have questions that came up or any reflections on that meditation, I'd like to take a few minutes and answer any questions or reflections about it if that would be helpful to you. I think that when we talk about the literal aspects of practice, it's so beneficial for one another. So sometimes we name our talks because it goes on to Dharma Seed and they want to have a name. So the name of this talk is It Matters That You Notice. And this comes from a poem that I'm going to start us off with. It's a poem that's called Hokusai Says from Roger S. Keyes. And if you'd like to follow along, Ileana is either going to put it in the chat or share a screen. I'm not sure which one, so just here you go. All right, here is the poem. Hokusai says, look carefully. He says, pay attention, notice. He says, keep looking, stay curious. He says, there's no end to seeing. He says, look forward to getting old. He says, keep changing. You just get more who you really are. He says, get stuck. Accept it. Repeat yourself as long as it's interesting. He says, keep doing what you love. He says, keep praying. He says, every one of us is a child. Every one of us is ancient. Every one of us has a body. He says, every one of us is frightened. He says, every one of us has to find a way to live with fear. He says, everything is alive. Shells, buildings, people, fish. Mountains, trees, wood is alive, water is alive. Everything has its own life. Everything lives inside us. He says, live with the world inside you. He says, it doesn't matter if you draw or write books. It doesn't matter if you saw or catch fish. It doesn't matter if you sit at home and stare at the ants on your veranda or the shadows of the trees and the grasses in your garden. It matters that you care. It matters that you feel. It matters that you notice. It matters that life lives through you. Contentment is life living through you. Joy is life living through you. Satisfaction and strength is life living through you. He says, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Love, feel, let life take you by the hand. Let life live through you. Thanks, Ileana. Isn't that gorgeous? So let's repeat. I'm going to repeat just this last few lines. It matters that you care. It matters that you feel. It matters that you notice. It matters that life lives through you. Contentment is life living through you. Joy is life living through you. Satisfaction and strength is life living through you. He says, don't be afraid, don't be afraid. Love, feel, let life take you by the hand. Let life live through you. I think that's mindfulness. To feel it all, contentment is life. Joy, satisfaction, strength. And of course we're frightened. Of course there's struggle. But we can come back to trusting that it matters that we care. It really matters that we care, that we notice, that you feel, that you have this presence. So to let life live through you, this full and expansive and inclusive definition of mindfulness, is when it's connected to the heart, connected to caring, we come into the poignancy of the experience of impermanence and interconnection, suffering, to dukkha, to the all, to the all. The Buddha said, happiness is contentment with whatever there is. That's kind of an amazing thing to say. Happiness is contentment with whatever there is. And you might say, are you sure? Are you serious? I'm supposed to feel content or happy with whatever there is? And I think what this is pointing to is truly that mindfulness includes everything, that we can train and develop the capacity to feel it all, to cultivate enough equanimity and resiliency to say, yes, it's like this. This is what is happening. So when we talk about happiness as contentment with whatever there is, I don't think we're talking about Hallmark happiness. We're not. We're not talking about that. Happiness as a steady current that runs through us. It's a contentment. It's that capacity to say, this is how things are, and my fundamental okayness is not broken by the ups and downs that are included in a life. So I think this also points to what is our relationship to impermanence, our relationship to the truth of interconnection or karma, that everything is linked to love, to joy. So let's just talk about a couple of those things together. The Buddha said, whatever has the nature to arise has the nature to cease. We know this. This is the teaching on impermanence. Whatever it is, whatever has the nature to arise has the nature to cease. Nothing is ever solidly permanent. And that can be, I know we talk about it over and over again, and I heard Sylvia either last week or the week before say, you know, all we're really talking about is impermanence all the time. It's all about impermanence. And she's been giving this teaching regularly about one who understands impermanence ceases to be in contention with their life, something like that. I think you probably know what I'm talking about, right? When we really turn towards that, when you're going along perfectly, or what feels so natural in your life, just doing your day to day, and then sort of out of nowhere, maybe you get a difficult diagnosis that you feel blindsided by. That happens. It just does. And we get rocked, and it's frightening, and then we find our balance again, because this is how practice shows up. We find our balance again. And we really come to understand that there is only the arising, the changing, and the passing away of everything. And it's hard. Nobody said this was going to be easy. It's hard. It's also joyful. There are parts of this that are really joyful. Another teaching that I just always like to bring into our conversations around impermanence is the piece from the Buddha in the Dhammapada that says, better than 100 years living without seeing the arising and passing of things is one day lived seeing their arising and passing. It doesn't take much to wake up, is what he's saying, even though it takes everything, I think. But this moment of, we can go along in blissful ignorance for 100 years, and then something, boom, wakes us up and we get it. Oh, right, nothing is permanent. And we start living from that place. Not anxiety, but with preciousness, recognizing the preciousness of our lives and others' lives. This wonderful Zen chant, you might know, says, let me respectfully remind you Now, you know, anytime somebody starts out with something or somebody starts out with, let me respectfully remind you, you know there's something big coming after that. I mean, that just that preamble is the, gets my attention. Let me respectfully remind you, life and death are of supreme importance. Time swiftly passes by and opportunity is lost. Each of us should strive to awaken. Awaken, take heed. Do not squander your life. That's what this is about, right? Do not squander your life. Life and death are of supreme importance. Time swiftly passes by and opportunity is lost. Each of us should strive to awaken. Awaken, take heed. Do not squander your life. I think that's really beautiful. Let's not squander. Let's be so utterly present. I just returned about a week ago from a river trip where I was on the Colorado River in Cataract Canyon going through Canyonlands National Park in Utah. And it is an awesome place to be inside of the earth, actually, in that way, to be inside of canyons where the walls in some places on either side of us were 2,000 feet tall. And here we are on this river in between that on a boat. And this is a trip that I do every year. I offer river rafting meditation retreats. So we were integrating our practice of silence and movement and meditation into this river retreat. But when you're inside of the earth in that way, I'll speak for myself, cannot help but notice with such incredible awe the geological forces that are right there. You see deep time, that this is exposed earth. These canyons are millions, like hundreds of millions of years old, to be able to touch rock that is exposed, that literally could be a couple hundred million years old. It's pretty amazing, and it's changed me. It makes me feel very, very small because this is so massive, and I'm just this tiny little one human life. And there was a place in this where we were, where we were on the Colorado River, and then we came to a place in the canyon where the Green River meets the Colorado River, and this is the confluence. And each, the Colorado and the Green Rivers, are major arteries, waterways in the western part of the country. And there was something so awesome about seeing these two profoundly important rivers meet and join and become one. And the Green River starts way up in the north of Wyoming. And the Colorado River starts, the headwaters are in northern Colorado, in Steamboat Springs. And they find their way through amazing landscapes. And they come into this connection. And it was just, I can't really even tell you to put into words that felt sense of the meeting of these rivers inside these canyons that are changing all the time. They look solid, but they're not. I mean, there can be incredible weather and it causes waterfalls and rockfalls and it changes which side of the river. There's a beach where you can camp or get off. It changes all the time. And what's happening now is that the Colorado River is at record lows. It's never been in recorded history as low as it currently is because of this mega drought that we're in. And so it's revealing more and more of the canyons because the water is lower and lower, which reveals deep time more and more. And this connection of that we are so integrated into the earth and the natural world this peace is completely undeniable. So I was very, I could go on and on about it. But to be connected to the earth in that way, to get to see it and feel it, to feel that awe, to see deep time, how long this has been going on, and yet it's still changing. And I kept saying to people, look where you are. And I think they got sick of me saying that because it was so magnificent. I mean, wake up in the morning and you know, see the sun as the sun rose and the sunlight creeping down the sides of these canyons. I just felt so lucky to be there. And that thing that Hokusai says, it matters that you notice. It really matters that we notice what's inside of us, what's outside of us, where we are, what our interconnection with the earth is, our interconnection with our lives. So that takes me to a piece I want to talk a little bit about, perspective. It gave me a lot of perspective and interconnection. So from the perspective of our practice, and we talk about not self or interconnection, it is that piece that everything is made up of everything else. That, you know, a piece of paper comes from the tree that came from the earth, that got watered by the clouds and the wind and the rain, and it grew. And then it got chopped down and it got turned into pieces of paper, and all the people that are involved in creating a piece of paper, you just start seeing how there is no separate anything, really. And so this piece of interconnection, that what I do matters, what you do matters, the ripple effects of what we are all doing, they are real. And so back to this piece that our ethical intelligence coupled with our emotional intelligence, part of mindfulness practice, never doubt how important this practice is. It has profound impacts. Zenju Earthlyn Manuel, she's a Zen teacher, and she says in one of her books, to taste a pine nut is to taste a pine tree. You ever thought about that? You know, to taste a pine nut is to taste a pine tree. To taste an apple is to taste an apple tree. It's really wonderful to think about things like that. So I want to read one more thing to you, and then we will talk with each other. And this is a piece from Carl Sagan, you may be familiar with. And Ileana will put it up, a picture up on the screen for us. This is a piece called The Pale Blue Dot. Anybody familiar with it? You just raise your hand. Actually, I can't see you right now because we have the picture up on the screen. All right, so take a look at this. And I'll share this with you. This is an excerpt from Carl Sagan's book, The Pale Blue Dot, and it was inspired by this image that was taken by Voyager 1 on February 14, 1990, so 30 years ago. And as the spacecraft left our planetary neighborhood for the fringes of the solar system, engineers turned it around one last look to look at the home planet. Voyager 1 was about 6.4 billion kilometers, 4 billion miles away, and approximately 32 degrees above the ecliptic plane when it captured this portrait of our world. Check it out. Look at this picture. Caught in the center of scattered light rays, a result of taking the picture so close to the sun, the Earth appears as a tiny point of light. A crescent only 0.12 pixels in size. And Ileana, can you move your cursor to just show where the Earth is here? Check that out, everybody. That's us. That pale blue dot is the Earth. So look at that dot again, says Carl Sagan. That's here. That's home. That's us. On it, everyone you love, everyone you know, everyone you ever heard of, every human being who ever was lived out their lives. the aggregate of our joy and suffering, thousands of confident religions, ideologies, and economic doctrines, every hunter and forager, every hero and coward, every creator and destroyer of civilization, every king and peasant, every young couple in love, every mother and father, hopeful child, inventor and explorer, every teacher of morals, every corrupt politician, every superstar, every supreme leader, every saint and sinner in the history of our species lived there on a mote of dust suspended in a sunbeam. The earth is a very small stage in a vast cosmic arena. Think of the rivers of blood spilled by all those generals and emperors so that in glory and triumph they could become a momentary master of a fraction of a dot. Think of the endless cruelties visited by the inhabitants of one corner of this pixel on the scarcely distinguishable inhabitants of some other corner. How frequent their misunderstandings, how eager they are to kill one another, how fervent their hatreds. Our posturings, our imagined self-importance, the delusion that we have some privileged position in the universe are changed by this point of pale light. Our planet is a lonely speck in the great enveloping cosmic dark. In our obscurity, in all this vastness, there's no hint that help will come from somewhere else to save us from ourselves. The Earth is the only world known so far to harbor life. There's nowhere else, at least in the near future, to which our species could migrate. Visit, yes, settle, not yet. Like it or not, for the moment, the Earth is where we make our stand. It's been said that astronomy is a humbling and character-building experience. There's perhaps no better demonstration of the folly of human conceits than this distant image of our tiny world. To me, it underscores our responsibility to deal more kindly with one another, to preserve and cherish the pale blue dot, the only home we've ever known. That's Carl Sagan 30 years ago. But we can take that down, Eliana. Thank you. Isn't that amazing? And you want to know about perspective and interconnection, and let's get a grip on who we are and that what we do matters, to realign with our practice all the time, to ask ourselves that question, why am I here? Toward what end? How can I be of help? So what do you think? Let's take the rest of our time just to talk with each other on anything I've shared, any comments, any questions?